podcast, the Control Podcast. Your host, Zach Harper, Matt Moore, back on the Skypes. We took a day off. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, it's been snowing in Denver for three straight days.
It does that.
In April, apparently.
Yep.
So, that's fun. We did take a day off yesterday. We just didn't feel like we could come on here and make jokes about, you know, J.R. Smith and bad basketball and bad movies after everything that happened on Monday. And I know Zach and I were affected by it and upset about it, like everyone in the country was. And you know, Boston, our hearts are with you. You know, we're thinking about you.
Definitely. I don't know if that's being dramatic or anything. Like, I didn't directly have anybody affected by what went on, but it just seemed like we could probably go a day without talking about basketball and talking about movies. Like, we could just. It doesn't accomplish anything, but it just seemed like the thing to do.
Yeah, and you know, we want to be respectful, and
for sure.
It's a hard line to walk, I think, for everyone. You want to, because you're, you know, everyone, and people, will go, you have to go back to work, and you have to do stuff, and that's just kind of how it is. But afterwards, you really don't want to, you know, like, you don't want to do anything.
Yeah, like, definitely not. And it, like, seeing the reaction of people, like, especially in our community, because of what we do, we know a lot of people in Boston, and we know a lot of people who've reacting in a very positive way, and that's what you like to see out of, you know, you never like to see stuff like this, but seeing the reaction of people, it does warm your heart to know that, like, hey, like, people are still, like, they have these stupid city feuds, and yet they're always going to pull together in a time like this, and you've seen that, and that's nice.
Yeah, like 360 days out of the year, most years, or 365 days out of the year, most years, you know, New York is like burn in hell, Boston, but you know, immediately New York was like, we're there for you.
Yep.
So it's good to see. But we are going to start talking about basketball again. That's what we do. That's what we get paid to do.
Let's talk the hoops.
Let's talk about how wrong we were.
You know what? Denver wins tonight. I got that preseason prediction dead on, and that's all I'm going to let people know when they tell me about how dumb my other predictions were. I'm going to say, hey, I got Denver's record right on.
I'm looking at it right now to see how I did. I'm looking at we've got our, what we did was we took our preseason numbers and we evaluated, we compared them to what it was. And I've got, what do I got here? 18 teams I hit within five, pending tonight's results, I hit within five wins of their win total.
That's not bad.
Not bad. Not bad at all. I did okay. You know, and if I got more than 15, I'd be happy. I'd like to get that number more in the 20s, but you know, I hit a lot of them. So let's talk about, you want to do what things we got right first? Let's do things we got right first.
Yeah, because that should be short.
So, what'd you get right?
Well, I am a win for Miami away tonight from getting them dead right, too. I had them for 66 wins. They have 65 right now. That's pretty good.
I did. I'm looking at, they're at 5 for me. I shorted them. I thought they were going to win 60, and they won 65. I guess I just thought that they would coast more. I think that's kind of what I thought, is I thought that they would coast a little bit more than they did. And also, they could have, since they locked up the one, but they just keep winning games.
Yeah, see, I honestly thought they were going to go on a 27-game winning streak.
Well then.
So, yeah, I had that mapped out perfectly.
Let me go find that post where you nailed that one.
It's somewhere in the back.
We'll go from there.
Yeah, somewhere in the back of the internet.
I'm pretty proud. I pegged Brooklyn for 47, and they're at 48 right now.
I think I also had 47 for Brooklyn.
You know, and I had the Nets, Knicks and Sixers all at 47 and having tiebreakers determine it. And the Sixers obviously, whoops!
Yeah, the Sixers are, that's, I mean, obviously the Lakers as well, but those were the two teams where I really missed because, well, the Lakers were obvious and why they missed, but the Sixers, like, you just expected Andrew Bynum to play. And I don't know if it would have been worth, you know, 12, 13, 14 wins, but it would have been worth something.
Yeah, so I had the Sixers pegged for 47 wins, and they only had 33 going into tonight, so not good there.
It's unlikely they're going to win 47 games.
It's not likely
they're going to. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a hell of a send-off for Doug Collins for that to work.
my four teams that I overestimated the most were the Lakers, who I had for 63 wins.
Woo!
I really thought they were going to be good. I mean, really thought they were going to be great. I thought this was going to be one of the best seasons we'd ever seen from a team.
Yeah, I had them for 56, so not much better, but a little bit better.
Seven. That's, you were more reasonable than I was. I bought in hard when I was like, Nash, Howard, that's it.
Yeah.
I was like, Nash, Howard with Kobe as a shooter, that's 63 wins to me. Just, you know, injuries and their crappy play and everything. 19 wins I missed him by. So I feel like everyone missed on the Lakers. I feel okay about that one. The Timberwolves is my second worst. I missed them by 15 games.
Yeah.
Injuries.
Yeah.
Where were you at on the Wolves?
I had them at 41 and 41.
I'm at 45. I thought they were. I really liked, you know, Love and Rubio, and I like Budinger a lot. I feel like I do wonder if they'd had Budinger, I wonder how much closer they'd be.
I don't think he directly leads to like 8 or 9 more victories, but I feel like they'd be in that range because when he was healthy, he did just like completely change how they were able to attack on offense, and that's been their problem this year is they can't score, and it's not like, oh, he's going to go out there and get you 30, but he did, when he was on the floor, like the spacing was just huge. Like it was so much better, and that impacted the way they could drive. It impacted the way AK could cut, the way Pekovic played the post. Like it really did impact everything early on. I don't know if that would have kept up, but that was the effect.
On top of being surprised that, you know, the basketball gods hate them, was there being so good at defense surprising to you?
Absolutely. I thought they were going to smoke teams on offense and get smoked on defense, and it was the exact opposite.
Sixers were my third worst at 14 wins. I was off on them, and then we get into kind of the more – I just kind of missed on them. I thought the Suns would win 33 games. I thought they'd be bad, but I didn't think that they would be 25 wins bad.
I had them for 26 wins.
Good on you,
Carl. And they just need a win tonight. Michael Beasley could lead them to the 26th win.
But you don't want him to because we need to project shots and points.
Well, he could do it on 25 points on 33 shots.
That'd be amazing.
I was slightly off with Boston.
Yeah.
I had them for 53 wins in the second seed. Not quite there.
I wasn't right. I wasn't that far behind you. I was at 49 wins for them, and they're at 41. I was 8 off on them.
Yeah, I feel like they didn't quite have it this year. Well, and a lot of that's Rondo, but they weren't really on pace to get...
No, that's the thing. I get irritated at this, and there's like talk of, like, is Doc Rivers coach of the year? And I'm like, look, they were bad. And then Rondo happened, and they got good.
I would be more in his corner for like coach of the year consideration if a team that is 7 games under 500 wasn't locked in for the 8th seed right now.
Right.
Like I don't, and that's the thing. Somebody today was arguing, or not arguing with me, but like they were blaming. Well, they were like discussing your grade for the Jazz with me. I'm like, well, I didn't grade.
The names are on there.
I didn't grade the Jazz, so I don't really care. But it was like, shouldn't we wait to see what happens tonight? I was like, well, they still played the same way that they played. He's like, yeah, but their production means more if they end up in the playoffs. I was like, well, really, them ending up in the playoffs is all about what the Lakers do, and it's been about what the Lakers do all season because the other teams played well enough to make the playoffs fairly convincingly, and if the Lakers were a 56-win team this year, Utah would have been eliminated, you know, a couple days ago.
I think for me, part of it also is I love the NBA and the system it's set up. I like that there are so many playoff games. I really do. I like the first round is so big. I like that we have 8 teams in each conference. But it's a lot. I mean, making the playoffs really isn't all that impressive. It's more impressive than the Western Conference. But, you know, I do feel like, you know, Utah played the way it did and it was okay. But I also think if, you know, Utah, I think coming into the season was one where there were expectations for them. They either needed to be substantially better, or they needed to go ahead and move on.
Sure.
And they didn't do that. They just kind of are.
And the thing about them is like, and this happens every year, so you can't really just say, "Oh, Utah is only in this position because of this." But the Lakers were hurt by injuries all year, even with guys playing through them. And so they may not make it. The Timberwolves probably should be a playoff team if healthy. And the Mavericks should be a playoff team if healthy, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then I would even throw I would honestly throw Portland in the mix for if...
Yeah, Portland's at least up there.
Yeah, I think if Olshea knew, oh, we're actually going to be okay. Like, I think he was like, oh, I'm not going to build the bench because we're going to be terrible.
Right, exactly.
And then he was like, oh. Like, he actually had an interview about that. Like, well, if I'd known we were actually going to be good, it might have gotten somebody that was an upgrade over Luke Babbitt.
Yeah.
Might have looked into that.
So it's not a knock on Utah. It's just like, well, the landscape isn't what it's supposed to be. And it's usually not, but that's, you know, they've had a good year. I think that, you know, even if they make the playoffs, like, they're just a first-round feast for Oklahoma City. It's not like they accomplish anything more than playoff revenue, which that's important to some teams, and that's important to them, and it gets their young guys' playoff experience, which matters. But really, like, it won't matter that much.
I don't know how much playoff experience in a first-round sweep does. I really haven't been able to figure that out. If like, you know, because we talk about, like, the winning cultures and the losing culture. If right. you have a winning, if you have a slightly winning culture, but a playoff losing culture, does that actually advance you? It teaches you about how intense the playoffs are, but I don't know that it teaches you how to get yourself there.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it actually brings to the table, but I think it, like, they get to see the bright lights, they get to answer the questions. Like, it does give them a little bit of a taste of it. Like, I'm not saying it's going to make Derek Favors an all-star next year.
Right.
But I think it's important to at least, like, kind of, you experience the lifestyle of the playoffs a little bit, even if it's just for a week.
True enough. Here's a surprising one. I overestimated the Cavaliers.
I mean, they had a lot of injuries, too.
Yeah, and that's the question. Okay, so I had a 29, and they're at 24 right now. Does Kyrie and Varejão not only make up for that, but probably push them to where I drastically underrated them? Would they have been a 35-win team, if healthy?
I don't think 35. I mean, I think they probably get 5 or 6 more wins. Like, they're still not a good team.
So, like, I estimated them correctly. I feel good with them.
Yeah, no, I would say you did. Oh, I had them for 24 wins.
You are a monster, man. You're really good at this.
I wouldn't say I'm good at it. I think I just got lucky with a lot of them.
We're going to Vegas next year.
Sure.
The Pistons, I'm not surprised I overestimated them. I overestimated them by 5 wins. I like Lawrence Frank as a coach. I think dating back to when the Nets were decent. I really like Greg Monroe. I think I expected Brandon Knight to be decent. Didn't think Rodney Stuckey would have whatever happened to him.
Yeah, that there needs to be a little investigative reporting on what the hell happened to him, because
he's outside the line.
He's not Stuckey a good player anymore. And I'm not saying he can't be a good player again, but just as of right now, he's not a good player. And that's
they really need to move him too. They desperately need to move
yeah.
him.
Yeah, I had them for 31 wins, so I was pretty close. Oddly enough, I had the Bucks for 34 wins and missing the playoffs. I wasn't that far off. I just overestimated the East by a lot.
the Mavericks are funny because I'm 4 off on them. I pegged them for 44, and they're at 40 right now.
Yeah, I had them for 42.
Do what?
I had them for 42, so it was pretty close. But, yeah, I had them in the playoffs. I had them as the 8th seed.
That's what's weird is I did not have them in the playoffs, but I really thought – I think that I actually underestimated them because I look at not only the Dirk injury but just how they played. I'm like, they were actually considerably better than I think I thought they were going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought – especially considering the Dirk injury, like Vince Carter had a nice year. Marion had a nice year. Mayo for most of the year had a nice year. Brandon Wright had a really nice year. Like, I think they had a lot of years that I didn't expect. And I'm not a big Darren Collison guy, but I thought he would be better than he is.
The Wizards I nailed. 31 wins for the Wizards I pegged. They're at 29 right now. Can get to 30.
I had them. I overestimated. I had them for 36.
I just never thought that Okafor and Ariza as two of your primary guys is going to get you that far. Like, your primary guys have to be not LeBron level, but like LeBron, I'm trying to think of like a good comparison, LeBron 06 level.
Yeah.
To be able to win, you know, 35 plus with Ariza and Okafor as your main guys. That's not even saying that they're terrible, because if you have guys that are worse than them, you're in like a Timberwolves with Garnett era kind of thing.
Right. They're just not guys that play the offensive end of the floor.
Like, I like Okafor as you know, if he told me, okay, you have to get a center that's going to be affordable, but yet not cheap, that's going to be a serviceable starting center for a championship team. Okafor, I think, is on that list for me, where I'm like, yeah,
oh, for sure.
You can put him in.
I honestly, I mean, this wouldn't happen, but if the Wolves lost Pekovic and replaced him somehow with Okafor, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
I think he's a good center. You know, he'll defend, he'll rebound. He doesn't do much for you on offense, but I think, like, he can be a nice complement to a really great stretch four.
Raptors, I pegged, man. 35, you know, I pegged him for 35 wins. They're at 33. He can get to 34. I'm very happy with that because they didn't really have injuries. I just thought that they would be better, but not great.
I had him for 30. Honestly, if I knew about the Rudy Gay trade, I probably would have had him for, like, 38 or 39. So I would have missed him regardless.
Yeah, that's one where I guess I can't take too much credit for it because of the Rudy Gay trade. Like, maybe they should have been better or maybe they should have been worse. Thunder did well on two. I had him for 62, and they're at 60. They can get the 61 tonight if they care to, which I don't think they do. But you know, even their backup team might be able to beat the Bucks if everyone rests. So 61 versus 62, I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I had him for 59, so I feel good about that.
Basically, my playoff predictions didn't do horribly. It was just basically if you take out the Lakers and move everybody up and then sub out the Rockets for the Wolves.
Yeah.
On there.
Yeah, I mean, I missed badly on the Warriors. And it was one where I said, if they're healthy, they're a playoff team. So I was correct there, but I didn't expect them to be healthy. Even without a healthy Bogut, I still didn't think they would be this good, and they've blown me away.
If the Warriors lose tonight, I nailed it exactly. I actually thought that the Warriors were good. I thought that they would be really good. I thought that they would, well, I didn't think they'd be really good. That's what's really weird. If you tell me 46 wins in the East, I'm like, hey, that's a really good team. If you tell me 46 wins in the West, I'm like, eh.
Right, yeah, and that's the funny thing is you don't know that 46 in the West will even make the playoffs most years.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I had them pegged for a playoff spot and thought they would do well, but you know, and I really do think it's been really impressive. And honestly, you know, we made fun of it a lot. I was at the finals when Mark Jackson got hired, and I went to the presser, and I was ready to go in and be like, ha ha ha, hand down, man down, this is going to be a disaster.
Right.
Going to the press conference changed my mind because so many really respected basketball people were there and were just like, you're going to be great. And it didn't seem just like nice. It seemed very authentic. And I was on a Warriors World podcast earlier this year and they asked me about him. And I was like, with Jackson, if it's a good team, they're going to be better than probably they would be with another coach. If they're a bad team, they'll be worse. And that's kind of what happened with him, I think.
Yeah, I think he's kind of – I think he might be in that Flip Saunders zone for me, whereas, like, you give him a good team, I think he's good. You give him a bad team, I don't think he can do anything for you.
Yeah.
And with him, like, I wasn't against the hiring at all when it happened, and people are making fun of it. I was like, well, we don't know if he's a good coach or not, so I'm not going to react to it because I don't know. Like, I'm not going to tell you he's going to be a good coach. I'm also not going to laugh and say, oh, it's a horrible hire, because, you know, Doc Rivers was hired out of nowhere, and he was fantastic. And you're just going off his basic announcing voice and ignoring the fact that he was a really smart player during his career. Like, you never know with that kind of stuff.
The Kings, I'm at 29 versus their 28 currently. I'm at 29. So basically, the Nuggets play early tonight. And so if the Nuggets beat the Suns, the Nuggets will have locked the third.
If the Nuggets beat the Suns.
Man, the Suns beat them. I think the Suns beat them twice. The Suns have beaten, like, the Grizzlies and... The Grizzlies and Nuggets have had issues with them. So it's really kind of weird. It's really weird. I don't get it, but it's true.
Yeah, they're going to kill them.
But they... Anyway, so if the Nuggets do beat the Suns, they lock the three. The Clippers may be like... And the Grizzlies will probably be halfway through their game.
Yeah.
So they'll know if the Grizzlies are like down 20 and resting their starters, the Clippers may be like, oh, we're getting the four anyway. We're going to have home court. Let's go ahead and tank it. So then I could like nail the Kings pick, which is apparently important to me.
That's very important. I had him for 26. I had him tied for the Suns for the worst in the West, and they surprised me a little bit.
Here's what's funny. I was too off on Indiana, 49 versus 51. I had him for 51. They're at 49 right now. They can get to 50. Those two wins are very important to me because that would have been the difference in them getting the 2 seed, which I was absolutely convinced the Pacers were going to be the second best team in the East. I was absolutely convinced.
I also had him for 51. I had him for the 3rd seed, and I still feel like I missed on him.
Like... And I don't know whether it was, like, they and the Knicks are kind of opposites, where the Pacers started off horribly, and for, like, a couple weeks there, I was like, oh, God, I really whiffed on this one. And then they got really good for a long time. And then towards the end of the season, they kind of petered out again versus the Knicks were red hot to start and red hot to finish.
Right. Yeah. Completely agree. Knicks,
I do need to say this because I will say this. I am too hard on the Knicks for a number of reasons. Like in their middle stretch, they were still winning at basically a 6-4 ratio. Like they were going 6-4 on their 10 game splits through the middle of it. So they weren't going like 2-8. Like they were doing well.
Right.
Or even when they weren't doing great, they were still doing well.
I was off on, I had the Knicks for 45 wins, and clearly I think they're going to beat that.
That's what, and see, maybe that will surprise some Knicks fans. I had them for higher. I had them for 47. I missed them by 6. If they win tonight, I'll have missed them by 7.
Although, I did predict that 2-7 matchup of Knicks-Celtics. Just had them a little reversed.
Just a little flip-flopped. I find it oddly comforting that I nailed the Hawks. I had them for 43. They're at 44. So I can't hit it exactly. But within two games, I'm like, feel pretty good about that one.
Yeah, I also have them for 43. I had them as the 8th seed. So just a little off. I overestimated the East. Way overestimated. I blame the Sixers.
Well, here's the big one I have for you, because I imagine this one is one you bid on, too. I had the Bulls for 43, and they're at 44.
I had them for 47.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
I nailed certain aspects of the East in an odd way. Like, I got this 2-7 matchup, but it's reversed, and I got the 4-5 matchup correctly. I was just off on my win totals, but that was weird.
Wait, who are you getting the 4-5?
I had Brooklyn at the 4 and Bulls at the 5.
No, it's not locked yet. Bulls can lose tonight, Hawks win, they're in.
Well, that's true, but I had them both for 47 wins. Mm. I was much closer to Brooklyn than I was the Bulls.
Well, here's kind of the interesting thing. I pegged the Bulls for 43 wins, and I thought Rose was coming back.
Yeah.
So you can probably argue I underestimated them, especially when you factor in their injuries. Like, I think you can probably go ahead and take that as a win, just because not only did they lose Rose for the whole year, but they also lost Noah. They lost Heinrich for an extended period of time. Yes, Bulls fans, I do think Heinrich contributes to you winning sometimes. You know, they did have injuries to all of their guys, and Taj Gibson, I think, was a huge loss for them for a lot of the year.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, I think you can probably take that one as a win. I probably underestimated him. Brooklyn, I had for 47. They're at 48. We talked about that one. I had the Bobcats for 17. I underestimated the Bobcats.
Oh, I had the Bobs. I had the Bobs for 23. I felt good about them.
So, yeah, that's funny. You were 3 over and I was 3 under.
Yeah.
Going into the night, so one of us will end up taking it. Magic I had for 16 and they're at 20. The Magic were legitimately better than I thought they were, but not much.
for as odd of a relationship as I've had with Magic fans this year, I had them for 26 wins. I way overestimated.
Isn't that weird that you like the it seems like the teams that you and I had very adversarial relationships with this year throughout the season, we actually were very kind to.
Right.
You know? Hornets, I thought they were going to win 23. They won 27. So good on New Orleans, honestly. The Hornets fans are really disappointed in this year. Sorry, Pelicans fans are very disappointed in this year. But I feel like they did exactly what they needed to do, which is like they developed Davis. They probably have answered the Eric Gordon question, though that's not going to help them in a lot of ways. You know, they know that Vasquez can at least be a good backup guard, and they've discovered that Al-Farouq Aminu has a pulse. Like,
right.
And Ryan Anderson's good. They just got to get better pieces and get veterans.
I had him for 30. So.
I was talking about this with Orlando Radio yesterday, just real quick, and we'll do a lot more draft in the future, but I really like the idea of them getting Oladipo. Gives them a defender that can score.
I mean, I guess if you're getting rid of Gordon, I like it, which they probably will try.
Memphis, I shorted. I don't know how that happened. I thought that Memphis would be better, but the West, I think I did what you did in the East. I thought the West was going to be even better than it was.
Right.
Especially with the Lakers, and so I thought that the Grizzlies would slip a little bit, and that would affect like their mindset. And honestly, the Grizzlies and Nuggets have already had their best seasons in their NBA, for record-wise, in their NBA respective histories.
Yeah.
The Nuggets had better seasons in the ABA. Obviously, the Grizzlies weren't in the ABA. And they're having their best seasons by far in efficiency differential. I mean, we're talking like their highest before was like +1, +2, and we're looking at +5, +6 for these teams. This has been great years for those two franchises.
Yeah, and the Clippers have to throw them in there, the Clippers set a franchise record in wins.
Yeah.
54 wins.
How crazy is the 3-4-5 this year?
Yeah, it's been great. Here's the thing. I underestimated the Grizzlies, too. I think, with you and I think we're so overly cautious about our favorite teams because I underestimated the Wolves in terms of a lot of people thought they were going to be a playoff team, and I was like, I don't know about that. Like, I think they'll be good, but I don't think they're a playoff team. I think they're close. And I think part of that is you don't want to come off as a homer, right?
Yeah.
So you over analyze the team and you try to come under because otherwise it just looks like you're, flapping your gums about your favorite team.
Yeah, I really try hard to be brutal. I mean, I was talking about this last night on Twitter. Somebody was accusing me of I bet you're all favorable towards the Grizzlies. And I was like, man, a lot of Grizzlies fans don't they're confused when they find out what my avatar is on Twitter because they're like,
right.
That's. I mean, I am brutal to when they. I mean, last year during the collapse, which I think it was honestly mostly that's a fluke game to me. I just don't believe that the NBA teams, if you play that game out 100 times, that the teams are going to not even 100 times. Four times that the Grizzlies are going to blow a 30-point lead.
Right.
But even then, I was like, you can't do that. Like, you can't consider yourself a legitimate team with a push and then blow a 30-point lead at home. You can't do that. That's inexcusable.
Right.
See, I think I'm definitely harsh on him. Here's what's weird. I had the Nuggets for 51 and was like, I am more confident in the Nuggets than most. And they just absolutely destroyed that estimate.
I'm very proud of myself. I mean, I had them as a 2 seed, but I thought they were going to be a really good regular season team, which I know the way I word that and the way I say it frustrates.
It's not just the wording, man. It's your phrasing. It's your inflection in your tone.
Because I mean to be a prick when I say it. So, yeah, I knew the Nuggets would be this good. I'm happy to admit it.
You're going to take them in the first round versus the Warriors, right?
What's that?
You're going to take them in the first round versus the Warriors, right?
I think so. I mean, Fareed's going to play. Lawson is looking better. The Gallo injury really gives me pause. I mean, I feel like if there is going to be an upset in the first round, Steph Curry's just going to go nuts.
Here's what's really weird, and I do wonder this. I was very big on Gallo in New York, and I was very big on Gallo last year, and then this year, surprisingly, having covered him game by game by game by game by game, I haven't been as big on him, and I'm trying really hard not to be like, oh, it doesn't matter, they're fine, because they're not fine.
Right.
But I really am looking at him like, if I look at the dynamic pieces, if I look at what the different players I know are capable of on a shifting game-by-game basis, the impact I'm not as concerned with. Like, I feel like they would be, and this is what's weird, because Iguodala has been horrible offensively. I feel like if Iguodala went down with the same injury, they'd be completely screwed, because then they're just the same team they were last year.
Sure. I think the difference I have with them is, without Gallo, is this whole year, and part of last year, but mainly this year, I've been all about the threat of players on the floor, and not necessarily production. And I think the threat of Gallo really matters because they know that Gallo's really their only outside shooter. Like, Lawson's a decent outside shooter, and they, I guess if they played Jordan Hamilton, he can shoot. But
they won't.
Right, they won't. But,
it's
you know, like,
that's like the X factor now, is Fournier going to be that guy?
Yeah, and it's just that teams knew they couldn't leave Gallo, even if he's not shooting well. They know this guy can shoot, and so they're less likely to leave him on a rotation. And just not having that threat out there, that gives me pause about them. Not necessarily his production, but the threat of what he can do.
We'll have more on the playoffs starting tomorrow. I thought, midseason, you and I were like, oh God, how badly did we miss on the Blazers? And then, oh look, I'm only 6 games off. Here's a secret. There is somebody that lives in Portland that talked to me extensively about the Blazers team that knows the team very, very well. And he was so down on them that it really convinced me to go against them.
Yeah.
And they were better. And Damian was great. And I picked him for Rookie of the Year, even though there's a very compelling case by Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, which is a friend of this program, about why Davis should win. And I was talking about it with Ethan last night about how, I think if you vote for Davis, honestly, the production really is that overwhelming. I did consider role and what I watched in terms of what Damian was responsible for versus what Anthony was responsible for. And that's kind of where I ended up making my pick. But I think that either one would have been a very deserving rookie of the year. They were good, but you know, we kind of knew, like, look, for me, I've got to be honest, it's Lillard's great, Aldridge is great, Batum's very good, and then I have questions all the way down.
Sure.
You know, and Wesley Matthews, I think, was a big X factor there. And
yeah, I thought Matthews was great this year.
Like, he was a lot better than I expected.
Yeah, and I think I just didn't expect him to be that healthy, and when he played, I didn't expect him to have a big impact because of the health issues, but I was really impressed with what I saw from him this year.
So they had a better year than expected, but still it didn't get quite out of hand. Particularly the individual on Twitter that said he was going to come calling when it was Blazers versus Thunder in the Western Conference Finals.
How'd that work out?
That was fun.
I just missed the Blazers. I had them for 33. No, I had them for 30. They're at 33.
Be a little bit better. So the Knicks I want to talk about.
Let's do.
I had him for 47. They're at 53. My frustrations with the Knicks stem from teams that make bad decisions drive me crazy. I think it's why I don't mind the bad teams. That, like, the teams that don't have talent, I'm able to watch more than a lot of people are, because sometimes I target teams that don't have talent, but at least they're doing the right thing.
Right.
Because oftentimes those teams lack ego, because the guys are like, well, I'm not that good. Like, the Bobcats do stupid things from time to time, but in general, their problem is they're not very talented.
Right.
They're just not very good. The Knicks are exceptionally talented. This is a ridiculous... I was thinking about this the other day. This is a... I mean, if you ask me, like, guys who I think are talented, just in terms of, like I said, just talent, the ability to do things, like Raymond Felton, Tyson Chandler, Carmelo Anthony, Jason Kidd, Pablo Prigioni, J.R. Smith, you know, even like Kenyon Martin, I think is still talented, and that's a testament to his work ethic for him to still be able to produce at this level. You know, Chris Copeland, I've loved this year. Copeland's my favorite part of Knicks games. I'm sure I'm missing somebody huge here. But for me, Amari, I've always been a huge mark for. I'm a huge Amari mark, and what's happened to him makes me really depressed. But
yeah.
This team is immensely talented, and so when they make bad decisions, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me, where I'm like, why are, you know, when they were creating stuff early in the season, it was awesome, and if they continue to do that the entire year, I'd be like, look, I really think the Knicks can win a title. When they went away from it in the middle of the year, I feel like that was partially because, one, their natural tendency is to go away from it, and two, because defenses know how to shift them there. What's happened over the last month can be argued, maybe they've gotten back to it. And if that's who it is, then they're really going to surprise me. Maybe they can really make a run at the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, if not win. It's not that I think the Knicks suck. I think the Knicks are a really great team. I get frustrated when they go away from the things that bring them so much success. And I feel like this year the big thing has been they did a lot of things that brought them success, like pick and roll, driving kick, extra rotations, finding the open man, playing good defense, you know, working to find a good shot on offense. And then also, they had guys who hit a lot of high-percentage shots. They hit a high percentage on low-percentage shots.
Yeah.
And that's a really great combination to have. My concern is if you can carry it, without using the word that I always use, if you can carry that into the playoffs when the defenses shift and it gets harder to do that. But I think the Knicks have had a really great season. You know, they're a really deserving two-seed. They were the second-best team in the East this year, and it's been a really remarkable year for a team that's had so many miseries over the last decade.
And especially, like, they've been through so much this season. I mean, they've gone through a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
And to manage to keep their momentum at times, even though it didn't look like that's what they were doing, they did manage to keep things going. Whether it was pretty or not, like, they did, and there's a lot of merit in that.
Let's point out for Sheed.
It really ruined my day. I've been having some back troubles the last 2 days.
So you play for the Knicks?
That might be it. And I got it fixed today. And so I was having a great day, feeling good. I came home, turned on the Twitter machine. Rasheed Wallace is retired. People think that I'm joking about Rasheed, but he really is one of my favorite players ever. Just because of his personality, and I'm not the only one that feels that way, but if I could make him the godfather of my future kids, I would do it in a second. I think that he is one of the best personalities to ever enter the sport, and I think he has been underappreciated, and I think the last couple of years with Twitter and the internet have kind of revived something that should have been appreciated long ago.
Totally agree. I loved him in those Piston years. I just loved him in those Piston years. My favorite Sheet story, I went to the Cheesecake Factory at Caesar's Palace in 2008. And I'm in there, and we went there. Matt Watson, who he and I were writing for Fan House at the time. Matt's now with SB Nation. We went there because NBA players love Cheesecake Factories. So we're like, let's go to the Cheesecake Factory in Vegas during Summer League.
Yeah.
So we went there, and we were hanging out. And we got a lot of great stories from the wait staff about players that would come in. And we started like, you know, do players come in? They were like, you would not believe. And the best story was, we're like, well, who's your favorite player to come in? They're like, oh, it's Sheet. And we were like, what? And they were like, oh, we love Sheet. All he does, his wife wants to shop and he hates it. So he has to go and sit at the bar and watch his kids while his kids run around while his wife goes shopping at the Caesar's Palace shops.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they were like, he would just sit there and make jokes. And the other thing that was phenomenal is they said there's always this perception of the NBA player. And it's not just a perception. There are a lot of stories of whatever, you know, white, black, whoever, NBA players don't tip. Like, it's a problem. I think because so many people are after their money.
Right.
That's got kind of the deal thing of it. Apparently, Sheed, like, over-tipped by hundreds every single time. Would come in, order a drink, and then, like, over-tip by, like $200. And just hang out and joke with the wait staff, and his kids would run around playing the fountain.
I've just heard, like, that's the funny thing, is he always had this attitude and this stigma of being a bad guy. But really, he just had no filter and he didn't care. Yeah. That was the great thing about him, is he didn't care what you thought of what he said. Like, he was just going to be honest to a fault. And when you talk about people who have interacted with him, like, he's not the best guy in the world, but he's a great guy to be around.
Yeah. And there are people like that. I think that's a very good description. How did I underrate the Spurs again, Zach? How did I do this?
I did the same thing. Every year, I feel like they just make us look stupid.
I picked him for 52 wins. I picked him for 52 wins and was like, oh, hey, look at me. I think the Spurs are going to be great. And they went 58.
Yeah, I had him for 54, but which isn't too far off, but I still feel like it's way off.
And it's just more irritating because you feel like you should always be ahead of them. You feel like you should always overrate them because they're so good.
Right.
And yet, you know, I picked them for 52, and they just had another remarkable regular season. Just a really terrific one. And I don't say that with the same kind of tone that you use for the Nuggets, where I think that they're the best regular season team these last couple of years that I've ever seen. And that's just based off of their understanding of the flow. Because I'm like, look, the Spurs could win their 59th game tonight in a year where they legitimately sat out Duncan throughout the entire year. Duncan and Parker, sporadically throughout the entire year, they just called off games and they still won to this degree. That's remarkable.
It's controversial, but I'll say it. They should bring back Popovich. Bring him back next year. Don't fire him.
I underrated the Clippers too. I had him for 47. I thought they'd be good, but I did not think that they'd be this good. 55 wins for them. Good on them.
Yeah, I underrated him as well. I had him for 49. I had him as the 5 seed, but I did not expect this kind of early dominance and then being able to maintain as well as they have, even though I still have questions about them that I don't know that I'll get an answer to. But they've been a lot of fun. Not just in a highlight way, but just seeing the team camaraderie this year, they've been a lot of fun.
Their bench celebration is the best in the league this year.
Yeah.
And finally, the really one that I'm betting this is the one you and I both just whiffed on horribly. If the Houston Rockets win tonight, I will have missed their wins mark by 16 games.
I almost hit them exactly.
No!
I had them for 31 wins.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I was way off as well.
Suckered me in there. I was like, oh my god, am I the only one that thought this?
I had them for 28 wins, and then they traded James Harden, and I was like, I'll add 3 wins. That works.
I'm trying to think of what I'm surprised at. I guess I'm surprised, here's part of it. I think I was like, oh, they're so young. But this is like, I think, Lin's third or fourth year in the league. It's Harden's third or fourth year in the league. It's, you know, Carlos Delfino's been around forever. Sheik's been around a couple of years.
Yeah, Sheik's been around a little bit.
I mean, they're, and this is Parsons. I think part, I knew how good Chandler Parsons was going into the season, but I didn't really factor that in to be like, hey, Chandler Parsons is really good. This is going to make a difference.
Right.
So, really remarkable job by them. No real, you know, fluke or whatever. Just, they were just much better than we expected.
I think my problem in underestimating them was, one, you didn't know what to expect with the addition of Harden. Like, I knew he'd be good. I knew he'd be a top scorer in the league. I just didn't think he'd be able to lead like this right away. And I don't think I really knew what kind of style they were going to play. Like, I just thought...
I would not have pegged this style for Kevin McHale.
Yeah, I just thought they were going to be a boring, basic offense that he was going to still be great at because he's James Harden. But I didn't expect them to be this creative at making chaos, you know?
So good on them. It was, you know, a really great year for them. I want to ask you, overall, the entire scope of the season, because you and I, with being national guys, we have a kind of a different perspective. What was your general takeaway from the whole season? How did the season feel to you?
It felt really encouraging. I feel like the league is in such a good place, and seeing LeBron James establish himself the way he has, seeing the greatness of Kevin Durant, seeing Carmelo finally learn how to like lead a team, and you know, whether you want to say like he's inefficient, like he's not as efficient as you would like him to be, but I think he sets the tone for that team in a very important way, which has helped them be as successful as they have. Like, just seeing the stars in the league step up the way they have, like seeing the way Kobe Bryant played, like the way, like that team has been entirely disappointing the entire season. And yet watching the way he's stepped up, like, no, he can't defend anymore, but he kept that team afloat. Like, aside from Dwight Howard, and I guess you could say Kevin Love and Derrick Rose because of the injuries, seeing the stars in the league step up the way they have has just been very encouraging to where I love where the league is. Like, I've loved where the league is for a while, but you see an evolution. Like, it didn't remain stagnant, and that's been awesome.
There are so many great teams, so many great players, so many great stars. It's just, you know, somebody was saying the other day, like, the league is watered down. I just wanted to pull my hair out because we talked about it. We did the Dinosaur Tears podcast earlier in the year.
Yes.
And what's surprising is I think a lot of teams moved up into higher tiers for you and I, and yet the teams above them moved into a higher tier as well.
Yes.
You know, like Miami and Oklahoma City were even better this year. And Oklahoma City lost Harden, and they won 60 games.
And it's not that they lost Harden. They lost him, like, 3 days before the season started.
Yeah.
There wasn't time to adjust.
And, you know, they won 60 games, and Miami won 27 games in a row, and New York won 53 and is the 2 seed by a mile. And, you know, New York has been phenomenal, and the Pacers have been about what we thought. Brooklyn's been about what we, you know, thought, but that's still good. They didn't disappoint, I don't necessarily think, you know, and the Thunder are amazing, and the Spurs are, again, this just absolutely monstrous, super tough team to beat. Denver and the Clippers and the Grizzlies had their best seasons in franchise history.
Yeah.
And they're the 3, 4, and 5 seeds.
Right.
Golden State had such an encouraging year all around, from Steph Curry's development to how their offense came together to getting contributions from so many guys. By the way, look, David Lee's defense is there is no question it's bad, and the Kirk Goldsberry thing is great in that it shows like what the science is going to be capable of in terms of analyzing players. David Lee plays his ass off.
Yeah.
Like, on offense at least, and I do think that he goes for rebounds. I think he is limited in what he is able to either mentally or physically do defensively. I do not – David Lee doesn't dog it. He just doesn't. Right. I don't think he dogs it. I think he's either worried about fouls, he's worried about making the wrong play. He's just bad at defense, and that's fine. But, you know, David Lee's a guy that works his ass off. And
right.
I really wish that he got more credit for how much success they've had this year.
No, I completely agree. And there is something about, like, yes, you would like all these players to be complete players, but that's just not possible.
Right.
Like, it's really not. And so I've kind of gone to the shift of, like, can Ricky Rubio shoot? No. Is he fun? Yes. All right, I'm good. Is Steph Curry great at like breaking down the defense and getting into the lane and getting a big bucket at the basket? No. Is he fun because he can dominate the game from the 3-point line? Yes. All right, I'm good. Like, there are certain players where, yes, they have these huge glaring imperfections, but if they add value to the game, like, I'm fine with them. That's the thing that's always frustrated me about like someone like Monte Ellis is like he clearly has all of this talent.
Yeah.
But the way he played, like, detracted my interest in the game.
With Melo, and this is exclude the last month, Knicks fans. No complaints about him in the last month. These are not the droids you seek. Like, I am not doing that here. If he bullies his way into the lane, misses the runner, and tips it back in every time, I have got no complaints for him. He's freaking Paul Millsap with a better jumper than.
Right.
And he's a monster. It's when I see Melo catch the ball with 17 seconds, and then suddenly it's 7 seconds, and he's still jab stepping. You know, that makes me crazy because I'm like, you're capable of so much. Like, don't take that. You know, like, don't take that. Even if you can create space to get the shot off, don't take the. You know, he's going to contest. Like, you can drive. You can make a move. You can get open. Like, you know, you can be so good. You can not only be so good. It's not just good. It's like Melo's great now. He can be elite if he does those kind of things. And that's what we've seen for times in his year. And maybe, you know, if he pulls that out of the playoffs, I'm going to be excited to watch it as much as anybody.
I'm really excited to see him in the playoffs because I think he is elite and I think he's on another level that he's never been on. And I don't think it's his ceiling. Like, I think we're going to see him continue to improve.
But, man, it's a, you know, but I will say, though, that's the expectation, though. And I mean, there are big expectations on him.
Oh, like, sure.
You know, we talk about the Nuggets being a regular season team. They're, you know, him and his former team are in very similar places where the Nuggets have to get out of the first round to be able to prove that they can at least win in the playoffs to some degree with this kind of approach, or at least with some semblance of this roster in the core.
Oh, sure.
And by the same token, the superstar approach of New York has to be able to prove that they can do what you... Oh, and just real quick, holy crap, everyone listening... I wrote this super crappy Road to the Finals Indiana Pacer thing last night at 2 o'clock in the morning because I forgot about it. But Zach wrote, we do this Road to the Finals series every year where we outlay, like, what's going to happen for this team to get to the finals? And Zach did the New York Knicks, and he introduced this phrase called selfish ball movement, and it's one of the coolest things we've had on the site this year. Like,
thank you.
There's no, like, there's not video and then the graphs. Like, it's just great writing. Please go read it. It is phenomenal. It is one of the best things we've had on the site. Everyone's complimented it. Knicks fans love it, predictably. Like, go read it right now. It's excellent.
People, well, I will say this, and thank you very much. People didn't like it when they heard you say, oh, he introduces selfish ball movement. And people are like, what the hell? I was like, well, no, I mean, this is
that's
a good
why I get
thing.
The link. That's what, but it gets the link, though.
Yeah, that's true. But I was like, no, wait. Like, this is a compliment. Trust me. Like, I love it. Like, just looking at what they did, and I was like, wow, for all the ball movement they have, they don't have a lot of assists. And right. They don't have a lot, like, a high percentage of assisted field goals. Like, in fact, their two-pointers are the lowest assisted by a huge margin. I mean, it's like a difference of 9% between them and the second-to-last place team in the league. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then I looked at their threes, and I was like, they're like 21st in assisted three-point makes. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I see them moving the ball around. And so I went and watched some video, and I was like, wow, they really do open up spaces for, like, this isolation, selfish basketball. But it's this weird, like, symbiotic relationship where the ball movement creates the space, and then it allows the one-on-one player to do what they're good at. And especially with Melo, but you see it with J.R. Smith, too. It's like, this is – I don't know if this is the design, but it's oddly brilliant.
Melo taking guys one-on-one has never been a problem. It's only when he tries to go one-on-two.
Right.
And if they're able to use that scheme in the playoffs to prevent – this is a great first test against Boston. If they're able to force Garnett to not be able to help, then they're going to be in a really great place.
And that's – you know, I'm not a big Chris Copeland guy, but if he does get to play, there are going to be times just with his size. Like, KG may have to match up with him, and that's – kind of a tough decision. I mean, KG's a great defender. He'll still play really well, but if you can cause him to think about leaving the guy, you know, that's kind of a win.
How excited are you for Knicks Celtics?
Excited isn't the word I would use. I'm excited for the play on the court. Off the court, I'm not really interested in the genitalia measuring contest that the fan bases will have, and that subsequently the media has. Like, it's like New York media versus Boston media, and you see it like with New York media doing this with Miami media at certain points during the year. I'm just like, why are you guys feuding?
That's always weird to me. Yeah, that's
yeah. Awesome. Like, let the team do it, but why are you guys taking a side? Who cares?
Over under how many tweets I get of, I bet you're happy about this, aren't you?
I pick a number, I'll go over.
Like, because no matter what happens, that's what's going to happen. Like,
yeah.
If the Knicks lose game one, they're going to be like, I bet you think you're pretty smart now. It's like, no, like, I picked the Knicks. Like,
I mean, we'll have more of this with, like, the previews and stuff, but just real quick, who do you have? Do you have Knicks or Celtics?
I have the Knicks. I rode Boston for a long time. I think that their emotional quotient for Rondo has finally faded out. I believe I did take them in five because Celtics fans think that's an insult, but it's based off of if I convince myself that Boston wins two in Boston, I think it goes seven because then Boston's got enough. We can do this to force seven.
Yeah.
And I don't think it goes seven. I'm absolutely sure I'm 90% sure the Knicks win this series. But I'm 75% sure that it doesn't go seven. And so to me, if it doesn't go seven, it's got to go five because I can't see Boston not forcing game seven in game six in Boston.
Yeah. I've got Knicks in seven just because every time you look at the Celtics, there's no reason to believe in them, but they find a way to surpass your expectations.
The worse they get, the better they are?
Yeah, I think they'll steal a couple games. Whether it's stealing at home or whatever, like, I just think they'll be able to push it.
I'll save this, but I will say, I was thinking about the matchups. I started going through my head this morning, just doing player versus player, player versus player, player versus player, and was like, this is kind of interesting, not from a who's better standpoint, because the Knicks are better, but from a strength versus weaknesses standpoint, I was like, this is going to be kind of interesting, especially in the backcourt. Like, this is Avery Bradley and Courtney Lee. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah. If the Celtics had Rondo, like, let's just say he magically came back for the playoffs, would you still have Knicks winning?
God, I have to think about it. I don't know. I really don't. I can't.
I think I would have the Knicks winning, but I think I'd have it going in nine.
I'd probably have the Knicks winning just because the Celtics were just really bad this year.
Yeah.
A lot of it's like, I think the X factor for me is like, is Jason Terry going to suddenly be like, no, I really was sandbagging it.
Right.
No, I just don't care about the regular season anymore. I only play for this for May. That's all I care about.
Right.
Like, if Jason Terry suddenly like, oh no, I'm going to hit those big shots that you're like, wow, that was a big shot. Jason Terry was the king of that for so many years in terms of the non-superstar to be like, holy crap, that's a huge shot. And he's been so bad at it this year for Boston.
Really bad.
So that's going to be – we'll talk a lot more about this starting tomorrow. I want to congratulate you. You made it your first year on Ion Basketball. You survived and didn't get fired.
I would like to say it was a great year, but Rasheed Wallace retired today. So it's the worst year I've ever had.
So for you guys – what to be on the lookout for. We've got award picks up. I wrote, like, seriously 5,000 words about the awards.
Defensive Player of the Year stuff was really good, by the way.
The desk hated it.
Sure.
It's too long. It's too long entirely. But I did a huge breakdown Defensive Player of the Year talking about the reasons why everyone should – who should be considered and why, and then why they eventually did not get it. We did conversations on six-man and Coach of the Year and all that. LeBron was easy for MVP, but I still went through that process to explain – who landed where. Ken Berger's got his award picks out today. We've got season grades we talked about for every single team, all 30 teams. Check that out. Starting tomorrow, we'll have Eastern Conference playoff previews, and then Thursday we'll have Western Conference playoff previews, or Friday we'll have Western Conference playoff previews. Playoff picture tonight, we got the last, we got eight teams for seven seeds still up in the air, Zach. That's crazy.
Did the Lakers make it?
God. Yeah, I think they make it. I think they make it, but I honestly wonder if they're – I think they're probably going to make the eight. I think the Rockets win tonight because I think the Rockets are Well, no, I scratched that. I think the Rockets are gonna tank, and the Lakers are gonna get the seven. I think the Thunder would, or the Rockets would rather play the Thunder than play the Nuggets. That's how much they hate matching up with the Nuggets.
I think,
but if Golden State wins, they get the seven, and that's perfect.
Yeah,
it's hard. I'll go ahead and say the Lakers because I've stuck with them the entire time. But you know, it doesn't get much more up in the air than the final game of the season.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. I'm interested to see what Memphis does. They've got the Jazz at home in Memphis. I'm interested to see how they handle the situation.
I've got to think that Hollins is going to sit them. They've got to get Zach 3 days rest. They just have to.
Yeah.
And they can't control their own destiny, and the Clippers are playing a terrible team after them.
Right.
Like, at some point, I really think Hollins is just going to be like, you know what? We need to win the Clippers game Saturday. We didn't do it.
Right.
Like, that's what I would do. I would be like, we're done. Everyone's out. You know, have fun, Ed Davis. That's what I would be doing.
Does Steph Curry break the record? He needs 2 made 3-pointers.
Yeah, I wonder. Tough.
I'll put you down as a maybe.
Like, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah,
that's gonna have to occur. Yeah, who do you think makes it in terms of the Lakers Jazz?
I think the Lakers make it. Actually, I don't know if the Grizzlies.
I know, it's hard.
Because I really think
the most likely scenario to me in terms of if I don't get too caught up in recent events is the Rockets win, the Grizzlies win, the Lakers get the 8th.
Yeah.
Which, that's not good for them.
Well, it's better than missing out.
Yeah. Although, when you think about it, is it? Like, having to play the Thunder, is it?
I still think it's still more embarrassing to not make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Let's do it. All right, thanks, Zach.
Thanks, man.